We ask no more questions. Their lovers don't care. We're dead on the air. We're dead on the air.
And welcome to Dads on the Air for Tuesday, the 15th of September. We have a great show in store for you today. In the studio, we have Ian Purdy, the DJ impersonator.
Good morning, Phil York.
G'day, how you going?
Yeah, good to be here as usual, mate.
Absolutely. We have Rocking Pop, Peter Vandervoort.
Just out of mothballs, mate. Caught in the traffic, but good to be here.
Absolutely, mate. Great to see you fly through that door with about 5 seconds to go.
Yes. True to form.
Seat of the pants material. It was
absolutely
truly thrilling.
And also joining us today, our newest member, Bill.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody, and nice to be back again.
Okay, so today, yes, we have a great show on. We will be talking with, once my screen comes up here, sorry, we will be talking with, who are we talking with today, Pete, do you know?
Joachim Rumstead, who is a Swedish activist, human rights activist, and also a musician, which will speak to most of us here, and a political blogger, and of course a father that's at the moment, I think it's 200 days, he said the other day, since he's seen his daughter. So he's written a number of songs. He's got a great band called Tequila Sunrise, and I've got a pre-recorded interview with him, so we'll hear lots of his music and some of his story.
200 days, eh? And I meet lots of dads that actually count the days and count the sleeps and stuff, so...
Yeah. Yes, well, he was separated from his child because of false allegations, you know, which have now been dropped, but it's too late, you know, the child's...
Yeah, the alienation has happened and, yep. Yeah, understand, mate. All right, we'll start off with the news. First off the rank is there is a Senate inquiry into suicides. This is from the Melbourne Age, dated the 11th of September. The Senate will hold an inquiry into suicides in Australia following revelations that the country's suicide prevention strategy is failing and the death toll over the past decade has been underestimated by up to 30% in some states. Community Affairs References Committee Chairwoman Greens Senator Rachel Seawert said the inquiry would investigate the accuracy of suicide statistics, the effectiveness of the prevention strategy and the personal, social and financial costs of suicide. Emergency service responses would also be examined, she said. So that's encouraging, especially for me on a personal level. You know, we deal with suicides a lot and it's encouraging to see that finally the government has got their ears open and willing to talk about... Well, I guess the reporting standards around suicide and try and get some reality to it, because as we know and as we've said on the show before, you know, you can jump off a bridge and it's not suicide, it's death by multiple injuries. So that's really good to see.
Yeah, no, suicide is an absolutely devastating aspect. One of the most horrifying aspects of the current situation really is especially deaths of young, you know, suicide, teenage suicide is particularly tragic.
Absolutely. And what else have we got in the news?
Oh, look, Daily Telegraph front page, the usual, you know, war of the sexes going on. Female cops bullied is the headline. Gemma Jones has written, police women have told of sexual harassment and intimidation at a New South Wales police command, including being demeaned because they are mothers, which is pretty shocking, really. But you really just got to say, I mean, the police force, like the army, it is a traditionally male culture. It's only recently that women have been allowed into the ranks of the police, and I mean, I don't condone any of this behaviour. It sounds really quite petty and childish, and these men should be more mature, and especially with women present. But the other side of it is, I mean, you can't expect an entire culture to change because women are present. I mean, women want to become involved in these situations. They can't expect to run the agenda. And, I mean, a lot of male bonding, unfortunately, does take place by making juvenile, petty, sexual remarks about women, and this just, you know, I mean, like it or lump it, this is a part of male culture, and in situations like the police force where you have a lot of pressure, high pressure situations. A lot of guys let off steam in ways that before the introduction of female constables were seen as appropriate, whereas now with women around. I mean, I'm not defending the cops because I do think, you know, that sort of behaviour is quite juvenile. However, there are two sides to the story, and I don't think if women want to become admitted into male-dominated areas, then they kind of have to learn to live with the culture. I would think that would go with it. Anybody else got an opinion before I get myself hung, drawn, and caught, before the feminists bang down the door and come and lynch me?
Well, it is a difficult situation. Obviously, no, I don't have a comment.
No. We're not game to comment, are we?
No, mate. No.
Well, you see, then on page 4 of the same Daily Telegraph, there's a heading here, bullying rampant in the staff room. Bruce McDonald has written, almost every teacher has been bullied by a colleague, a research study has found, despite zero tolerance for bullying in schools, University of New England researchers found 99.6% of teachers were bullied during their employment. Now, that's a huge 99.6.
That is.
Might as well say all of them.
Exactly.
Who's the 0.4 that didn't get, you know, they're all so bodybuilders, four. Muscly, you know. So, really, I mean, this thing, you know, this police culture, it seems like a form of bullying. This is a way that the male officers are bullying the female officers, and it just seems that, unfortunately, this bullying seems pretty rampant in our culture. And it's not just sex-based, as it appears to be in the police force. It's just a general culture of, you know, those in positions of authority or command or whatever, or superior social standing, bullying those in a lesser position.
Even here, we feel it here in the studio here. The minute you walk in, you feel dominated and bullied by Purdy.
Yeah,
he's got control.
Purdy
controls the knob
all the time.
And the slides and everything. And
I've got to say, Rock and Pop, you got me quaking in my boots. You know, you've had me quaking in my boots for years, mate. Yeah, the bullying going on here at Dancing.
Only because I come late.
And the local fascists arrive.
Oh, Carol, hang on. We're going to change tack now.
Yeah, the office staff are coming in to bully the lot of us to try and keep this bloody program relevant for a change. Bit late for that, I'm afraid. But anyway, it just appears to me, we do have a culture of bullying. It's most unfortunate. But, you know, what can you say? I mean, it's in the schools, and now they're saying it's in the staff room as well. So how are the children, you know, if the teachers are bullying each other, well, that kind of explains why the pupils are. And, you know, that to me, it's a sad state of affairs. I really don't know what can be done about it. People just have to have more respect for each other. What can I say? We need utopia. Bring on utopia.
Well, I think that might be half the problem, mate, is that we all are after utopia, but, you know, bullying has gone on for years.
Always. Probably by a different name, but
yeah,
it's always.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit like this.
There's always the strong and the meek. And
yeah, that's it. You know, it's a bit like the OH&S policies, you know, where you can't lift more than 16 kilos. Well, you know, in the old days, you know,
40 kilos.
People could do it easy. But now that these legislation and rules have been in for years, now all of a sudden people can't lift more than 16 kilos because they're not used to it, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, look, there's another article here in the Telegraph. This one's a bit more light. Super sperm proving too strong to handle. In the ultimate battle of the sexes, male and female bodies are fighting an evolutionary war, creating higher levels of infertility among couples, scientists have discovered. In what has been dubbed an evolutionary arms race, Israeli evolutionary biologist Oren Hassan believes men have created super sperm to beat women's bodies' natural defences. It goes on to say the study argued increasing rates of unexplained infertility showed stressful lifestyles, infection and pollution are not the only factors leading to trouble conceiving. These new super sperm have become so good, too many are penetrating the egg, destroying it, Dr. Hassan of Tel Aviv University found, a condition known as polyspermy. Polyspermy, people. A new word, a new condition. Polyspermy, super sperm. There you go. Isn't that fascinating? Fastibating, perhaps.
An article here from the Sunday Herald Sun in Melbourne, Mums Lead Abuse Shame, and it's by Laurie Noel. Child abuse is rising dramatically in Australia, according to the first in-depth study to be released on the issue in a decade. Data shows cases of abuse against children rose more than 50% between 2006 and 2008. In the 37% of cases in which a parent was the perpetrator, mothers were responsible for 73% of abuse cases, while fathers were the cause of 27% of the cases. The study also shows that mothers carry out more than 65% of cases of emotional and psychological abuse and about 53% of physical abuse. And they are also responsible for about 93% of cases of neglect. This study comes out in time as the federal government has signalled that it may roll back the shared parenting amendments of the Family Law Act, brought in under the Howard government to give fathers greater access to their children in custody battles. So, these data shows under, and it was arranged through the Freedom of Information Act, and it was asked by all states to include their data, and only Western Australia actually included their data.
Interesting. So what are they hiding?
Well, that's it. The rest of the states are saying no. You know,
there have been separate studies on Western Australia, and I think the figures support exactly what you're saying.
It's pretty old hat, though. I mean, we've known that in here for a long time, that, you know, we've been saying this for years, basically, that all this domestic violence, I mean, the statistics they use...
It's how you measure it, isn't it?
They're dishonest, you know, and finally they've got some real figures. And we've been saying this for years. This is nothing new, in my opinion.
No, it is nothing new, but, the general population needs to be educated about this and brought up to speed with it, because there are a lot of myths out there.
It's how you define and measure domestic violence and abuse and so on, because mothers used to be the prime carer, while it was normal for dad to be the breadwinner and the woman a homemaker. So by any measurement, the women would become the higher... would be the higher number of abusers, if you like,
yep,
because they were doing all the child rearing. So you would always get that figure of women being higher, you know.
Yeah, an extreme of that is just another story now from The Australian from the 11th of September by Angus Thompson. And this is a tragic story where a woman killed her two children by poisoning and suffocating them and yet was acquitted of their murder. She was found guilty of manslaughter, but this is a situation where the woman was convinced that her husband had left her for another woman, and she was she decided that she didn't want the children to live without her, and as a result of this, she took this dreadful action of killing the children. She described how she did it. She covered their nose, told the children a bit of hurt, and then over, she told the psychiatrist. She went on to make further statements that all her life was a drama, and blamed her husband, saying that her husband created it and now that he'd made her miserable. And through all this, there are some very surprising things. First of all, that the woman is not named. You can just imagine if it had been the father that had taken this action, he would certainly have been named. And that having been found not guilty of murder, she was found guilty of manslaughter. Her defence barrister would not comment on the outcome of the case, but he said his client would be pleased she had not been convicted of murder, no doubt.
Yes, you'd imagine. All right, well, we'll just go to a short song and we'll be back in a moment.
Thank you. grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dad on the Air.
Throughout human history, people have found ways to separate children, either from one or both of their parents, and we can trace this phenomenon right back to medieval times. Modern man has fine-tuned the method used to accomplish this insidious practice, and incredibly has made it legal to do so by creating a court of law that hides behind the mantle of in the best interest of the children. Like a cancer, this practice has spread to every corner of the globe and now affects hundreds of millions of parents and children on our planet. So today we see families torn apart by a secret court system that provides a perfect mechanism for the destruction of our family bonds, our communities, and our way of life as we know it. These are human rights violations, people, and they've legalized them. However, there are many people working hard to bring about change by raising awareness to this appalling practice of child stealing, which somehow has not yet registered with the main body of our legislators. Today we speak with popular Swedish musician, human rights activist and political blogger Joakim Rumstead. He and his band Tequila Sunrise has put together a new album with many of the songs referring to the various elements that comprise the destructive family justice system, which is doing so much harm to unsuspecting separated parents and their children. Joakim and his children are also victims of this system, and we have him on the line now. Joakim Rumstead, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Thank you. It's an honour to be here, to be on the show.
And thank you for joining us on the program today, especially with all the pressures you're under at the moment dealing with family law matters. And unless you've been there yourself, I think it's very hard for people to understand what it really does to your emotional well-being.
It's impossible. I can't even explain it to my own parents.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
We're going to speak about these matters shortly, but first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your love for and involvement with your music?
Yeah, my relationship with music was, it's as old as I am, I think. My dad used to have one of these old tape recorders, what do you call them, you know, the one with the 8-inch tapes or whatever.
Yes, yeah, tape recorder, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, not the cassettes, the big ones.
Yes, yes, I remember them.
Yeah, you remember them. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
showing my age, yeah.
Yeah. And he had a lot of jazz music, Oscar Peterson, and yeah, I started listening to that when I was about 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did, you know, and I've been fascinated ever since. And all I ever wanted to be was a musician. And in Sweden we have something we call a county music school, where you can go and learn music for free.
Ah, yeah.
You know? And, or we used to have, I think they're taking it away now because they have to save, you know. They can spend a lot of money on some things, but nothing on other things. You know, it's probably the same.
Yeah.
But the thing was with that school was that I could choose between two instruments. It was either the recorder, the flute thing.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, the recorder.
And the mandolin. And none of these felt that, you know, really cool at that.
That's right. Yeah, it's a bit old.
Since I think that the recorder, the sound of the recorder is one of the most horrible ones in the world, I chose the mandolin.
Right.
Right. The only thing worse, I think, is the bagpipes. But, you know, that's just five recorders put together, so... Yeah, and then they had to. They forced you to learn these, you know, to read music. And you know, I don't work that way. I have some sort of strange photographic memory when it comes to hearing stuff.
You got a good ear. Listen,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, I learned that way.
Yeah, me too.
So I used to pretend that I was studying these little dots that they call music, and I learned the songs, you know, by heart.
Yes.
And then I just pretended to play after.
Yes.
And that worked until that day the teacher accidentally turned two pages at once. I was busted.
You got caught out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my short career in the county music school.
Well, it hasn't done you any harm.
No, I guess not.
You've got a great sound there. You're a singer and guitarist. Is that right?
And you've got
a great blues rock band, Tequila Sunrise. We're going to play several of the tracks of your latest album during the program, especially since many of the songs speak of the human rights abuses inflicted by the family law industry and how they affect fathers and children. It's very good. This band started in the 80s and then you split up and following a 15-year break, you've reformed. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, I started playing in bands when I was like, I don't know, 12, 13 years old.
Yep.
We had a... back then, the things were a bit better for kids, I think. They gave us our own keys to a school, to a basement, so we had our, you know, we could rehearse there for free. So I've been playing, I started out with the drums, and I started out rehearsing at home, but my parents didn't like that. So
a bit noisy.
So I had to sell those, and then Dad had an old guitar hanging on the wall, so I took that. And then in Sweden, we had this military service. Or used to have anyway, where every man has to join the armed forces.
Yep.
Yeah, and I did when I was about 18 years old, and I met this guy there. His name is Asa, and we turned out to be total soulmates when it came to music. I mean, we loved exactly the same kind of stuff, and so we started a band.
Is he the bass player?
Yeah. And he also is a pretty darn good producer.
Oh, okay.
But he works in a factory making what do you call these wooden boards that you use for walling and walls.
Oh, okay.
So he calls himself a record producer because it's the same word in Swedish, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so we started this band out, and this was about 86, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we were joined by a drummer called Michael Ajax and a guitar player, another guitar player called Ulle something. It was a long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we started out playing the local, you know, we lived in the north of Sweden, and I think it was like 200 kilometers to the nearest town, the next town. So, I mean, it's not what you call... Well, I guess you being in Australia would know about wilderness.
Yes, yeah. Distance and wilderness, yep. Isolation, yep.
Mm-hmm. But there was a few, you know, places you could play. So we did that until between 86 and 2001.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years. And then I have the gypsy blood in me, so I had to move on.
Right.
So I moved down to Gothenburg, which is Sweden's second largest city on the west coast. I didn't know anybody here. I just felt that I needed a change of scenery. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, try to make it. You know, it's hard to do that in a small town.
Yes. North.
At least it was. Before the internet.
Yep.
So I started, playing in bands here. We had a big band once that played all the soul classics.
Brass and everything. Yep.
Yeah, everything. Girls in tiny dresses and.
Yep.
And everything. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So I've been a freelance musician all my life. You could say
yes,
But I also have been, I've been forced to do other work too, because sometimes you run into dry spells, and you don't make that much difference.
Especially nowadays, yeah.
No, nowadays it's impossible.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, I think it's time we have a listen to your music, Joachim. And may I say, half of the dads in the air team here in Australia are also musicians, and really appreciate the great work you're doing to bring these human rights violations to the attention of the community via your music. So we'll play a song of your album here, which explains why we have to be very, very careful about the partner we choose. So here's Tequila Sunrise with Baby That's Cold.
Like a black coal mine, it's so cold, it sends chills down your spine. Your love, baby, is like a rattlesnake bite. You go too numb to even put up a fight, yeah.
Joachim, your journey as a separated father of two children, trying to remain in contact with your children following separation, is not unique. However,
no.
You've agreed to speak publicly about your case in order that it might help other fathers who may be too frightened to speak out in case it jeopardizes their chances of maintaining contact with their children. So Kim, let's start from the point where you and the mother of your children parted company around, around 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us what followed after you made that decision?
Well, let me first say that it's exactly that fear that they put into us that enables them to do this. You know, the day we stop being afraid of them, that's the day they will lose their power.
Yes.
But what happened to me was that I met this girl, and she was a lot of fun, and she was a bit younger than me, and she just been released from one of these places where they treat you for drug abuse and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but she was beautiful, and she had a great sense of humor, and you know, we had a lot of fun, and
yes,
we lived a pretty uncomplicated life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was true feelings, at least from my part. She was on medications, and she drank a bit, and, but not that bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she stopped using all the heavy drugs, and
mm-hmm.
it looked like she was getting better, and I wanted to help her because I you know, I really liked her, and we were great friends. And,
yep.
But she had another side as well, you know.
Most...
That's a pleasant one. She was very, very jealous. She was very, I mean, she couldn't ever be wrong. If she was wrong, it meant that she felt wrong. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes she did these contracts that I had to sign that I was the one that was being wrong, you know?
Yeah, yes.
You know, I've been reading a lot about this. It's called the borderline personality disorder.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, she fits the profile perfectly.
You always you always walk on eggshells.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I read that book.
Yes, and, so did I.
It's no doubt in my mind. And she's been accusing me. Okay, let's take it from her. I won't skip ahead. And I have my son Robin from a previous relationship.
Oh, so she's not the mother of your son.
No. He was born 6 years before my daughter.
Okay. So,
he's 10 and she's 4.
Yep, but they're two different mothers.
Yeah.
Yep.
And with my son, there's never been any problems. I mean,
right.
We have joint custody. We've always agreed, even though I only seen him on weekends mostly. But, you know, I feel safe leaving him there. You know, I think he's still a bit too young. But, I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, he's here as often as he could anyway, so.
Yes.
And it's very unnecessary to start a two-front war.
Okay.
You don't want to do that.
No, that's right. That's right.
Adolf Hitler learned that as well. Anyway.
So the problem is with the mother of your little girl.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
but
that's
even before she was born. I mean, Robin came to see me every other weekend, and she didn't like that. I mean, she saw him as some sort of an intruder in our home.
Right.
And that's the one issue where I wouldn't budge because, you know, he meant more. But in every other issue, I have been a wolf.
Yeah.
You know?
You just went along with it.
Everything.
Yep.
You know, I tried this and I tried that, and if that wasn't good, I tried, you know, some other thing, and I even, when the kid was born, you know, she said that we need a bathtub. And I said, sorry, honey, but, you know, our bathroom is too small. I can't fit it in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't care. We need one.
Yes.
You know? So I had to rebuild the whole damn bathroom. And,
right.
And then I, you know, painted the walls in the living room, and she wasn't happy with the color, so I had to do that 4 times. And, you know, I was a typical Swedish man.
Right.
You know, she was the goddess and I was the slave.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Is that typical Swedish, is it?
I don't know. Maybe it's the same in Australia. The thing that we hear about Australian men is that they're really macho, and you know, there's a more of a macho culture.
Yeah, but I think they're working hard to change that.
Yeah. They have been here too for 30 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, we used to be Vikings once.
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The Vikings, yes. Yeah. How things have changed. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. She got pregnant. And when she got pregnant, she changed.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because she stopped taking all these antidepressants that she was on.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've read about borderline disorder is that antidepressants help, you know. They use them as treatment for this. So she got, I mean, from she went from being a, you know, a pretty nasty person to becoming a black widow spider.
Yeah, I noticed you mentioned that you feel that you've contributed to the breakup of the relationship as well. But you also mentioned that you both came from some troubled childhood. Do you think history is...
That was about my first relationship.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
I don't think I contributed too much to the other one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, I tried everything that was humanly possible, but nothing helped.
No, it's just that several interviews we've done recently, and there is sometimes there is an intergenerational issue at work where the parents have split up, and now the next generation is experiencing the same thing, splitting up and experiencing being alienated from one parent or the other. That didn't happen in your case and your partner's case, or
you mean my parents?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they split up when I was 17.
And did you remain in contact? Oh, with both of them, 17, you would,
Yeah, I did. But, I mean, those 17 years weren't exactly...
No, it wouldn't have been.
What you would call, a happy childhood.
Happy, sure.
I mean, there were a few issues there as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, sometimes it's better... if two parents can't stand each other, you know.
Yep.
But that's another question. It's got nothing to do with the kids, really.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yep.
I mean, there's only one solution to this, and that's if you split up, you know, feel free. But you know, the kids are standing 50-50.
So,
that's final.
So you split up, and. Did you?
No, I didn't split up. She took the kid one morning early and snuck out of our home while I was asleep, and disappeared with her.
Yeah.
And she moved away to another county where her mother lived. And this is a crime in Sweden. You can't do that when you have joint custody, but they do it anyway. And no one cares.
Is this the mother of your daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, she took off while you were asleep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we'd had a pretty bad argument during the night. And I was pretty broken up at that point.
Yes.
You know, I tried everything and it only got worse. It didn't matter what I did.
Yes, no.
And, as men usually do in those kind of situations, you know, we resort to, the whiskey and other stuff. So after the argument, I got drunk and I was sleeping pretty heavily that morning. And she took off and that's where it ended. And I drank for a short period, like maybe 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night I just cracked and I called the emergency psychiatric care. They have this team that you can call.
Yep.
And they took me in straight away, and the doctor said, you know, that, you know, whiskey ain't anything. That's no good when you have anxiety, you know. It'll only make it worse.
Yep.
I'll give you another medication instead. And he wrote a prescription, and that was even, that was heavy stuff, I tell you.
Yes.
I took the first pill, and I just, you know, wake up on the kitchen floor the next day.
Is that right?
Yeah. That was some real poison.
Yeah.
So I eventually I quit those two, and I had been emotionally been through hell.
Yep.
Literally.
Yep.
But as you said earlier, it's no point in trying to describe it to somebody who hasn't been there.
No, it's difficult.
They wouldn't get it.
So did you find her? Did you started looking for her, or what?
Yeah, I knew where she was.
Oh, you knew where she was.
Yeah.
And did you get access to your daughter then? You could.
Not much.
Not much.
The mother refused to speak to me. I only got her mother on the line.
Yep.
And she really hated my dad.
Yep. Yep.
And she was screaming and yelling at me, and I said, well, "What have I done?
What's
the crime?
Yes.
What have I done?"
Yep.
You know, you can mention as well that this girl that I was with, she never worked a day during our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, you know, make all the money, and while she was at home with the baby, I was working three shifts. You know, I was working days, nights, and evenings.
Yeah.
You know, just to pay the rent and all the other, you know, stuff. And, you know, is that my crime or what is it?
What else are you supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly. But that's what they turn against us.
Yep.
Yeah. And I wasn't allowed to see my kid. And it could be months, you know, between. And sometimes they would grant me an hour or two, you know.
Yes.
To take out the trolleys. But the amazing thing is that even though that my daughter was so young and that I had seen so little of her, every time I came, she came and you know, just threw herself at me. So happy to see me. And,
yes,
you know,
yes. She recognized you as a dad. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No worries. I mean, from the start.
Yep.
And I think also that she felt somehow with her little child heart that I was the one that was the you know, truly loving one, you know.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that... I can hear this really touches your deeper emotions when you speak about your child. So perhaps we should have a listen to the song that you wrote about your little daughter, The Eyes of My Child, and explains your feelings about what's happened to you and your child.
Into the eyes of my child, I see love unfalsified. They say, Mommy and Daddy, I love you both. In my heart, you always had hope. I am the
You're listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia, and worldwide on the web. My name is Peter van der Voort, and my guest is Joachim Ramstedt from Sweden. Joachim, did you then get the court involved? Did you instigate legal proceedings to get more contact?
Yeah, well, first they reported me to the police, because after they refused to answer the phone for 2 months, I went there without an invitation.
Yep.
And I knocked on the door, and I asked politely to see my child. And then they reported me to the police.
Harassment?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Because, yeah. I was never told. She dropped the case later on.
Mm-hmm.
But when she did, she'd already managed to get herself a secret address. The way it works here, you go to the tax authority and you ask for a secret identity.
Mm-hmm.
And the law says that you must have a strong reason for this, that, you know, a woman coming saying that my ex-boyfriend is threatening and dangerous, that's a strong reason. So for 1.5 years, I didn't have a clue where, no, it's 2.5 years actually.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a clue where my daughter was living, where she went to daycare, and this was while I still had joint custody, mind you. So, I didn't see any other choice than, you know, to go to court.
Yes. You don't, do you have special family courts there or not? Or are they just the ordinary?
Yeah, we do. But maybe not exactly in the same way as you.
Oh, okay.
Our family courts are a part of the social services.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the social services are divided into family court and social services.
Right.
And, but, of course, it's the same people.
Yes, yes.
So when you file for custody, or if you start a custody battle, I can just tell you a bit about the history in Sweden, just short so you understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In 1998, we got a new custody law, which was probably one of the best ones in the whole world. It stated that when two parents divorced, the child had the right to to spend equal time with both.
Both parents, you know? Yep.
Yeah. But of course, the feminist movement here in Sweden, which mm-hmm. is very strong, couldn't stand this, right? So they started this lobbying, and they had been very clever about it. And they have, of course, I mean, since the 70s, the radical feminists have been infiltrating the workers' parties here.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're running.
Yes, right? Yes.
And they started to write books. And on the covers it says true stories, you know. One of these books was called Hidden, and it was supposed to be about this poor woman that was trying to protect her daughter against her father that was
passed
from the murderer. And
I remember
you heard about it.
I saw all the emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And this book has been the feminist Bible here in Sweden for 13 years.
Yeah.
It's the most read book ever in the Swedish reading history, I think.
And it turned out to be fake.
It took 13 years before somebody started to investigate the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, all the people that has been hurt about this book have been trying, you know, they've been trying to go to the papers and everything, but nobody has been ever interested to. And finally, there was this old woman that used to freelance as a journalist for a women's magazine. But, you know, she actually helped this woman in the book back then.
Yes.
But she started to feel suspicious after a while, and she started to investigate it. And before the Christmas this year, her book came out, and it's called The Truth About Hidden. And what has happened here in Sweden since that is nothing more than, I mean, it's amazing. Because, of course, this book, everybody knows this book, you know, Hidden.
Yes.
Everybody has believed the story that a father has broken into kindergarten with machine guns and threatened the staff that he had watched outside her apartment with weapons and chased her all over the country, and I mean, threatened her, his little daughter, with a knife if she stopped speaking, and eventually this woman was so, you know, threatened, so the court in Sweden decided that she had to flee the country, and so she got asylum in the States. And as the first and probably the last person ever in history that has managed to get asylum, as a Swedish person.
Really?
Has managed to get asylum in America for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course there's more to the story, but, you know, it was never allowed to come out because the debate that has been raging here in Sweden ever since came out has been nothing else but, I mean, the biggest one ever. But the funny thing is, it's been going on the internet. You didn't see anything about it on the news, TV.
No, that's right. That's what happens with so many of these stories. It's a bit like the rogue domestic violence statistics just discovered in on the BBC radio program. I think you might have seen the link to that. Where after I think these statistics came out in the 1990s, and they've been taken up and they've grown legs and they've been used in all government departments and or various other studies have quoted these figures, and they turn out to be totally wrong. Nobody questions them, and not until somebody actually questions it, nothing happens.
Yeah. I question all of them now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yes. Yeah.
You know, after this thing exploded here with this book and everything, I mean, this woman that wrote this book, Monica Antonsson, she has probably done more for equality in Sweden than anyone ever has before.
Right.
Because after this, people have started to question the feminists. For the first time ever, you know?
Yes.
And after this author, Lisa Markin, who wrote this book, she turned out to be a big liar, you know?
Yep.
But
it changed the culture.
Yeah, they felt cheated.
Yes.
You know? They had believed this for 13 years.
Yes, yes.
And it turned out to be a lie. And then people started to dig, you know. The reporters and the journalists wouldn't, but you know, regular people like me and a lot of others, you know, that blogs and
yes.
We started to dig in this story, and we found out more and more and more.
Yes, yes.
And so the awareness is starting to, but you won't notice it as long as you just, you know, read the papers and watch the news on TV, because it's the same yada yada stuff, you know. But on the internet, it's a different matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's a generation thing as well, because the young people, they understand the internet. They go there for news. But while the old people, they're used to the, you know, buying the newspapers on the way home.
Yes, yes.
And they're fed a bunch of lies.
It's a changing world.
That's why the other issue that I'm very worried about is the internet.
Yes.
They're trying to take that away from us now.
Yes.
And I've done a song about that here. It's called Big Brother. I don't know if you got it or not.
I think we might actually play that one as well. We're speaking with popular Swedish musician, human rights activist and blogger Joakim Ramstedt. We'll go to a short break with one of the songs of his latest album. So here's Tequila Sunrise with It's a Crime to Be a Man. You're listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia, and worldwide on the web. My name is Peter van der Voort, and my guest is Joakim Ramstedt from Sweden. That's a great song, Joakim. It's certainly heading towards it being a crime to be a man these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look around, you see men being persecuted, stereotyped, marginalised and isolated everywhere.
And there
definitely appears to be a worldwide witch hunt underway with the domestic violence industry leading the way and working overtime to portray all men as violent, abusive thugs and misfits who are no longer worthy of a relationship with their children.
You know, when this happened to me, you know, I was just as blue-eyed and naive as everybody else, I actually believed that, you know, I had rights too. But as soon as I came to, because what happens in Sweden, you know, I sued. Well, I told you about the law that came in 98 and the feminists struggled to.
Yep.
And they managed to change it in 2006. And it became an apartheid law, totally. Of course, it's gender neutral, but it says that if the two parents can't agree about the child and what's best for the child, they can't have joint custody. So what happens is, when there's a conflict, one of the parents gets
custody. Yep. So
they get who?
Yeah, so it's
which one?
90% of the time. I've just done an interview with a lady from India, and she said in India, less than 1% of the fathers end up with custody. Less than 1%.
In Sweden, we have, I think, 10 million people living. It's a pretty small country. Pretty big, you know, but we're pretty scarce.
yes.
10 million. And 500,000 children are living with separated parents in Sweden.
500,000,
And 1% of those are actually living with their father, you know.
Yep, yep.
So 200,000 see him every other weekend or less, and 40,000 don't ever see him, you know.
Yes.
And the system that I was introduced to when I did this, first of all, I just went to the, you know, first lawyer I could find, which was a huge mistake, you know. And it's so unnecessary, I think, that every father has to make these mistakes every time.
Yes, you know?
And that's why I have I came up with an idea for my blog. I'm going to do a little USB memory stick, you know, one of these.
Yep.
And I'm going to do Daddy's logotype on it, and I'm going to put the first, I'm going to put, what do you call it, a survival kit, you know.
Yes.
Right? Every bit of information that they need to know when they end up in this.
Yep.
A list of good lawyers, you know, things to, you know, consider your rights. Everything's going to be there. And I'm going to try and sell that on my blog because I'm dirt poor.
Yes.
I'm about to get evicted, you know.
Yeah. That's how it.
That's another effect of, you know, becoming a victim of this.
The whole thing, the fathers have really got the rough end of the stick, once you get involved with the as you know, with this whole system, they bleed you dry, and you end up no further advanced with any contact arrangements with your children. You know, you basically tipped your family wealth in the pockets of the lawyers of the industry.
Yeah, it's not the lawyers either that much, actually, because, well, I told you about the first lawyer I hired. It was a woman, and I just went into the, you know, the first lawyer office I saw, and I said, you know, I need help, because back then I believed that a lawyer was a lawyer, you know, but I had understood since then that that's not the case at all.
No.
And she I don't know how to translate this currency, but she robbed me. But it's not her. her getting all that, of course. I mean, she's working for the firm.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to make money as a lawyer in Sweden, you practice, you won't practice family law, you'll practice, like, business law.
Sure, sure. You know,
corporate law. Those lawyers are making 5 times as much.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so the quality of the family lawyers are not as good, you're saying?
No, they're not.
Because the better ones are working in...
It's not a very popular area for lawyers to get into either.
No.
It's pretty nasty.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
You went to the lawyers to try and get contact with, or custody, or contact.
Yeah, and the first thing she asked me was, so how would you like to have it if you got to decide? And I said, I want joint custody. I want us both to, be parents.
Yes.
You know? I want my child to have the access to both of us, and both of us, of course, both of us. It wasn't hard, it's strange for me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, fine. And she wrote that down, and without telling me about this new law that said when you start a conflict, you're going to lose custody.
Yes.
So the only chance you have is to get nasty and get ugly and
yes,
and sue for single custody.
Yes.
Which was exactly what the mother did.
Yes, yes.
Because she obviously found herself a better lawyer than I did.
Yeah. So she ended up with custody, did she?
Yeah, and the verdict, the process order here in Sweden when this happened is you file for custody, right?
Yep.
And then they have something they call a pre-hearing, where no witnesses are heard, no evidence are being presented. It's just you and your ex-partner and your lawyers and a judge.
You're right.
And the purpose of this is to try and see if we can, if you can reach some sort of agreement, at least until the trial starts, which could be, a year away. And what always happens in these courts is, these pre-hearings, is that the mothers are, because they kidnapped the children, or the
yes.
children, they kept them closer to them,
yes.
when they were born.
Yep.
Which isn't that, funny, really, because, those are the ones that have the baby.
Yes, yep.
Lunches.
Yes,
Yes,
true.
And that's why they get the living, they get everything, and you get supervised custody 4 hours every 2 weeks,
So you get contact.
Yeah, because the mothers are using all these weapons that the politicians put in their hands. They say that we're violent, we're dangerous, and we're threatening, and this and that.
And you had to deal with
that all the time.
You had to deal with all those accusations in court?
Yeah.
Did you? Yep.
Yeah. Because they use it because they know it works.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And how long, over what period was this? Over how long did it all this take?
So for 1.5 years almost, I had supervised visits.
Did you? Because of the allegations?
Yeah. I wasn't allowed to take my daughter and take her to, on a trip to the town or to the ocean or... I couldn't take her home. I was forced to spend 4 hours every other Sunday in a boring apartment in this county where her mother lived. The social services for the family court, which are getting involved at this stage, they find these contact persons, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
I call them supervisors because that's what they are.
Yes, yes.
And these women are hardcore feminists.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So why did you only get supervised contact? Did she allege that you were a threat to the child or violent or something?
To her mainly.
Oh, to her. But how? why should you have supervised contact with the child if she alleged that you're violent to the mother?
Because the judges, they don't know which one to believe, right?
Right.
They've been brainwashed as everybody else here in Sweden, so they don't want to take any chances.
Right. Know?
So and maybe the mother is right. So
yes.
And if they allow the father to have custody, and it turns out that the mother is right, that he is dangerous.
Yeah.
Then it's on his head, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they, you know, so what happens is, this is what's been decided until the main hearing, maybe a year away, right?
So you've had only. You only had supervised contact.
Yeah. And the mother also had, managed to get herself a secret address, which only made me look even more dangerous.
Mm.
But, you know, she had no proof of me ever hitting her.
No.
And I asked the judge, you know, doesn't she have to prove this?
Mm.
And he said, yeah, eventually.
And what about if it turns out lies and she's committed perjury? Is there any punishment for that?
No, because in custody cases in Sweden, they don't have to take a stand under oath.
Interesting, isn't it? But I have noticed that there's quite a number of men are using the same tactics now, and getting custody of the children and turning the kids against their mothers.
Yeah.
So it's,
you see, what happens is that it's not that much about gender, really.
No.
I mean, in Sweden, it's like, I think it's 70% of all the custody cases, the fathers lose custody, 70%. And in more than 95%, he loses, the right to have his children written on his address.
But if...
And that's a financial issue, because the mother gets all the, you know, the money.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But under the system, under the system that we have, fathers are able to do it and often do get away with it, doing the same tactics. But for some reason, I think it may be something to do with chivalry or something, because men don't usually do it. But there is some men that claim that use false abuse allegations and take their kids away from their mothers. You know, so you
It's been first of all, it's been known to be happening here too, but it's mostly mothers.
Yes, yes.
And I've been reading books, and I've been to lectures about this borderline thing.
Yes.
And it turns out that it's much more common among women for some reason. It's 2/3 of women who have this, but men have it too sometimes.
And did you bring that up?
And I think this is a big part of it. And what I was about to say is that the family court, who has the real power of deciding which parent gets custody, right?
Yes.
It's not the court really. It's the family court, and they don't grant anybody give interviews. The press aren't allowed in there. They put everything under secrecy, and they close the doors, and nobody knows what goes in there. You know, they're the secret court.
Yes.
So what I figure out is that what they do actually is they always give custody to the parent that is least suitable.
Yep.
Right. And the reason for this is that it's much easier for them later on to steal the kids and put them in foster home and foster care and all these state institutions.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is a real horrible.
It's horrible. Terrible.
Yeah. That's a billion, multi-billion industry.
Yes, 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 that's right.
Yeah, it's organized crime, I would say, really. That's 20,000 kids a year in Sweden. And I've been working in one of these homes when I was younger and much dumber.
Yeah.
I've been working in two, actually. I've been working in one in Norway, which was actually pretty good. And I've been working in one in Sweden, which was a prison. It was a prison for kids.
Mm.
They even had isolation cells, you know?
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I've been, I've been, I've been watching children bang their heads in the wall in those cells, screaming, crying. Those aren't any places for kids.
No.
And they call them treatment. They call it treatment.
And are these kids that are taken from their parents, or?
Yeah, because if you can eliminate the strongest parent, and you give single custody to the parent that, you know, is the weakest, that's much easier for them later on to
to remove the kids.
There's a law in Sweden called LVU. Mm. It's a law about care about young people.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can translate it. And the social services then step in, and somebody reports something. It doesn't take much.
Mm-hmm.
And they can step in, and they can just take the kids and drag them away, screaming and crying. It happens all the time.
Joachim Remstad, it's unfortunately we've run out of time. It's been great having you on our program, and we certainly hope that things go well for you and that some good may come out of all this trauma and you get to see your daughter very soon. We thank you so much for coming on to the program and look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Thank you. It's an honour to be here.
You're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney. We'll go to a short break with another song off the Tequila Sunrise album, a song written by Joachim Remstad. He mentions this during the interview, and it's titled Big Brother.
Supposed to sacrifice liberty for security, we're advised against. against it. Don't we remember that when you sacrifice liberty for security, you lose both? That's what's happening in this country.
What a fantastic interview. Thank you very much, Pete. I guess that interview just shows just what heartache and just tragedy is involved in family breakup and separation, not only in Australia. It's a phenomenon that happens all over the world. I'd like to just let you know that if you'd like to hear any of this show again, you can go to www.dadsontheair.net. And that'll be on the World Wide Web sometime this afternoon. Thank you for your company, and we will see you all next week.
We ask all the questions that others don't.